Hello, welcome to Universal Soul Love. This is David Love.
And this is Lana Love.
Welcome to this show.
So today we have a very special guest, Trina Markandu Borden-Smith.
Trina Hi,
is a trained... How are you? Welcome to the show, Trina.
Hi, Thank Trina.
Trina is a trailblazer in the fields of yoga and spiritual and personal development. Trina is passionate about connecting people, building communities, changing lives, and raising consciousness. We heard about Trina because she is hosting and organizing a premier event called
The Divine Feminine,
which is coming up this weekend, which is actually being on for several years running, an event which focuses on womanhood, the ancient mysteries, and a deeper understanding of modern woman.
Which is certainly one of something that we promote and advocate here on this show. We're definitely into post-feminism and uniting of the genders. We've talked about this quite a bit in the past. We've had quite a few guests who have given us some insight on post-feminism and masculine and feminine energies. And we're really looking forward to having you on our show, Trina. Thank you so much for coming on today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. So glad you could make it with us.
So, Trina, you organized this amazing event. You've also been very active in the area of yoga, spirituality, and I understand that you've worked with internationally respected yoga teachers, mindfulness experts, tantra teachers, mind-body medicine specialists, and scientists. Where did all this start, Trina? You've been so active in this area. Where would be a good place to start?
Yeah, well, I think for me, it's come out of a long-held interest. So even as a teenager, I was always interested in asking the deeper questions about the meaning of life and why we're here. So for me, it was a natural progression. And having grown up in a Catholic family and sort of wanting to get away from that, I started to...
So you're an ex-Catholic?
I understand that. My father was Catholic, and I started searching for the meaning of life too.
Well, I saw quite a bit of hypocrisy in what I was being taught within the church, in relation to, say, people who might have been homosexual or single parents, or didn't quite fit the mold. And I started questioning. And by the time I finished high school and then went on to university, I was already practicing yoga because I had the fortunate pleasure of going to a school that had introduced yoga it was a girls' school, and introduced yoga for the teenage girls, which was fantastic. So I'd already had exposure to the physical aspect of yoga. And then after that, at university, I started exploring meditation and different groups and things like that. And then sometime later, after the political activist phase kind of died off, that we can talk about as well. I know that David and I had a bit of a chat about it recently. I then became a yoga teacher and also a mother at that time, and it sort of was a nice way to work in a field that felt something I was passionate about and was also flexible enough to be as a single mother of a small baby. And then as a result of doing that work, amazing connections happened, and I was teaching yoga at the Vedanta Centre of Sydney, and the Swamis there had... I approached them and I said, would you be interested in running a yoga conference? And they were very interested. And so together we ran our first conference, which I really put down the inspiration for that to my yoga teacher, Raju Govind, who I studied with in Melbourne. And he was a really humble man. He was one of the founding members of a very large yoga centre in India called the Vivekananda Yoga Research Centre. And as a result of the inspiration from him, he actually had brought together in Melbourne a range of different people like Professor Mark Cohen and Avni Sali, Craig Hazard, the sort of leading lights of pioneering the wellness industry in Melbourne and research and university level. And so I take a lot of inspiration from what he did.
Sounds like you've had a lot of wide range of experiences, like a lot of our listeners, and you've followed that spiritual path as the result of I guess world religions tend to have their limitations, and that's sometimes paradoxically, that's a catalyst for our path, for a spiritual path.
It's interesting to hear how many people are inspired in the opposite way by Catholicism. We have a lot to thank.
We do. I mean,
And it's interesting that you organized a yoga conference. I don't think I've actually heard of a whole conference dedicated to yoga.
No, I haven't
either.
It's
amazing.
But there is, they have everything.
Yeah. These days, yoga, I mean, it's just so popular now. So there's the conference that I currently run is called the Australian Yoga Therapy Conference, and that is now in its fifth year this year. And our keynote speaker this year is Dr. Shirley Tellis, and she's actually published over 100 papers in medical journals around the world of research into various aspects of yoga and meditation. So she's the world's most prolific yoga researcher, and there's so much that's happening out there in yoga. And in India, they're also obviously organising a lot of different conferences. And in Australia, we have our Yoga Australia conference, we have the Yoga Therapy Conference, and then there's a whole bunch of yoga festivals. So the yoga event space is alive and happening.
Wow, that's excellent. We do have a lot of people in our audience are interested in yoga and have been practicing it for a long time, a lot of our friends in our network. So that's great to hear. I mean, a lot of them are in America too, but nonetheless, it's good to hear that.
And I used to do Bikram yoga, and it's very hot, but it's wonderful, very amazing. What sort of yoga do you practice yourself?
My practice is really, you know, what we'd call Hatha yoga, and I won't go into all the definitions of what that means, but really it encompasses all the different types of yoga that are available. And for me, the practice is not so much about the physical, the asanas, as they call it. And in yoga, we've got what we call the eight limbs of yoga. And that includes everything from the way you interact with other people, sort of a code of self, you know, it's almost like the Ten Commandments, that kind of thing, and right through to meditation, as well as the asanas and things like that. So for me, it's a very integrated practice, and I have probably more focus in my particular practice on the meditative aspects.
I personally spent a lot more time with meditation, with mindfulness meditation and other types, but I've had a few friends introduce me to yoga in Florida and also in Australia, and I really like it a lot. I can see why you would choose that path.
And it's interesting to hear that you were introduced to yoga through school, and I know that a lot of kids find it really hard to actually sit still and do meditation. And I think yoga is it's a moving form of meditation, isn't it? That especially young people find easier to focus on.
I think you're right.
I taught kids' classes when I was teaching, when my little girl was about three. I had some holiday classes, and then I taught in some different schools. And these days it's very common, and we have a lot of amazing people a lot of whom are actually former school teachers who have now integrated the yoga into the work that they do. And there's also quite a bit of research into that as well, into things like ADHD and other, you know, different conditions that are affecting children, anxiety. And so coming into the school system, it's a great way for children to be exposed to that. But yeah, there is a way of teaching that people find quite successful, working with children, where there is a lot of movement, Lana, as you mentioned. But I always did incorporate a relaxation and a bit of meditation and some breathing into the classes that I taught to children, because some of them really were very receptive to it, and they really enjoy lying down. So, for example, with very little children, you could place a soft toy on their belly and teach them how to belly breathe lying on their back, and they've got a little, you know, teddy bear or something. So it's, you know, making it child friendly, but some of the practices are very much the same thing as I'd teach in an adult's class.
It's interesting that you said that some of the people that you worked with would have some, did you say, research into yoga and ADHD? I'm a medical doctor, and I treat a lot of people with ADHD, and very interested in non-medication treatments as well. I was wondering whether you could tell us a little bit about the connection with ADHD.
There was a lady who, her name's Pauline Jensen, and she did the research some time ago. I'm not familiar with a lot of the research directly, but definitely in terms of, you know, some of the things that come out at the Yoga Therapy Conference, people talking about the impact on anything from cancer. So, for example, when Shirley Tellis is coming out, she's going to do a one-day workshop on yoga and cancer, and then there's a workshop on mental health generally, which is something that, you know, you'd be more than welcome to come and have a listen in on some of the research. So we also run a yoga therapy training program, and one of our key teachers on that is Sal Flynn. She's a psychotherapist and a mindfulness expert, as well as a yoga teacher and yoga therapist and trainer. And so she, all the work that she does, you know, she refers to the mindfulness aspect, bringing in the yoga and the research. And she does a day on anxiety and depression, a day on trauma. There's now actually a number of trauma yoga therapy trainings around the world that are on offer. So there's quite a lot of research there. Some of it's come from Basil van Kolk, who's obviously the trauma guy, and he's actually researched some yoga with David Emerson, who's a yoga teacher, and some of that research is going to be has been, you know, coming out over the last few years. In fact, the Australian Yoga Journal are having an article on that in the next little while.
Oh, great. You know, I just want to let my listeners know that when I started out meditating 3 years ago, I started with a class at the University of Massachusetts under Jon Kabat-Zinn, who wrote a few books on mindfulness, and we did this for about a month. I actually couldn't meditate for more than 5 seconds without, because when you close your eyes, you realize what's there, and it's very stressful and anxiety provoking, and it took me, you know, quite a while to sort of get acclimated to the idea of sitting with myself and being with myself and just observing my thoughts and feelings. And there were people in my class who had all types of trauma issues and stressors in their life, and some of them, you know, just had such difficulty doing it to the point that they almost screamed. But the yoga part of it, I think what you're saying is it might be a little more useful for a lot of people, just some gentle yoga starting out, just that movement, because I think a lot of people need some movement with their meditation.
To take their mind off what's in their mind.
Mm. Mindfulness meditation is very different from just sitting quietly in your head, you know. So I think mindfulness is also for people who almost don't have time to meditate, who say that have such active lives that... You know, it teaches you to be in the moment, in the present moment.
So and certainly with practice. Yoga, you can get your exercise and your meditation in together. So,
right. And it's actually very challenging.
Right.
Yoga. I found yoga
that's
very
right.
challenging.
Yeah, indeed. And that is the aspect of it. Sorry, Lana, go on.
I understand that you've also had a lot to do with mind-body medicine specialists and scientists. I understand some of the people include Judith Hansen, Lasseter, Donna Fari, and Dr. Shirley Tellis, who's a yoga researcher.
With some of the mind-body specialists, so for example, Dr. Christine Page, who's coming out to speak at Divine Feminine on the weekend, she's just arrived in Australia yesterday. Some of the work that she's done, she's actually English originally, but some of the work that she's done was actually teaching doctors intuition training in America. And that was kind of her first gig, she was telling me, actually, the first job that she got working in the States. So she's really a pioneer in women's health and has a whole range of different things that she draws on. So she was one of the original people that set up an integrative medical centre in London under the British medical system. And she's trained as a homeopath and in energy medicine and everything. So she's also got, you know, the full qualification as a doctor. She's worked as gynecologist and obstetrician and in lots of different areas of hospital medicine. So she's a really exciting person to work with, and she's got a wonderful book that she's written about embodying the power of the sacred woman. So
really what a great name for the book.
Yeah.
Yeah. Say that again.
I said what a great name for the book, the sacred power of the
woman. Yeah, I like it.
That's very inspiring. And so in terms of integrative medicine that, for example, Christine is talking about, what could you tell us what the sort of the main thrust of it is? Is it combining it all together, or is it taking a new direction?
With Christine's work, you know, a lot of her work is around women, and it's in relation to finding well-being through self-love and embodying your own innate feminine powers. And that's why, you know, she's obviously a natural person for us to have chosen to be our keynote speaker at Divine Feminine. So it is a different take on it. It's not the traditional IM medicine that so somebody else I would have worked with, say Dr. Craig Hazard, who's always spoken about in the media in Australia, works out of Melbourne, University of Monash, I believe it is. He's working within the medical system. He's actually teaching a those who are training to be doctors in his special essence of health system, which includes mindfulness and all the sort of logical things that we'd associate with IM. So Christine has a different approach, and as I say, there's a lot of work around women, around intuition, around being grateful for your sacred body, and she goes deeper, so she'd be a great person to have on your show. She talks from the metaphysical point of view, and I think she'd have a lot to offer on the show. But, I mean, from her own teaching, you know, she's really, you know, shaking up the system, I think, in a lot of ways, to be working with doctors in that context and having them listen to someone who is a peer of theirs, but also because she's bringing in these different ideas in terms of self-love and embodiment of, you know, her own power, empowerment. Quite a different approach, isn't it?
Yeah, it sounds like it would make for an exciting show. I'll have to get in touch with her.
I'm really interested to hear that. Interesting enough, in my work as a therapist, and most of my patients are women, because women do tend to seek out help and seek out a solution to their problems more, I think, than men. And naturally, many of my patients' clients have had sexual abuse. And I'm actually doing some interesting work that, I would like to talk about at some stage, and I'd be interested to hear whether Christine or anyone else does this. I started out doing more psychodynamically orientated therapy, which is, you know, talking about feelings, allowing a person to gain more insight into their self and a deeper awareness of things, obviously with the security of having a therapist, having a secure place. However, I've found that the verbal aspect can be limiting. And so with many of my patients now, when there's a sort of a block, I will do deep relaxation and hypnosis, and we'll actually explore some of the issues when they're deeply relaxed. And when they can't put things into words, they might actually talk about a part of their body or a colour. And a lot of the times, you know, the focus is the block from sexual abuse. And I guess the focus of our work then is to process, get rid of the block, and for them to nurture and be grateful for the sacred feminine. And that seems to be incredibly effective. Mm. So I'm not sure whether anyone else is using hypnosis and deep relaxation and visualization like that.
I'm a board certified hypnotist myself, and I found that very helpful for myself and for some of my clients as well.
It goes deeper than your normal talking therapy.
Absolutely, right into the subconscious.
I think for us, because I work a lot in the yoga therapy field, that is something that's how we work in yoga therapy. So again, integrating all of those elements of yoga that you've just mentioned, whether it's meditation, deep relaxation, visualization, physical movements, all of that is employed in working with the client one-to-one. And we've found that, you know, the effects are very powerful because you are going beyond, you know, talk therapy effectively. So as I say, someone like Sal Flynn, she's working from, you know, a psychotherapeutic background. That's her training, but she's also got the mindfulness, and she adds in the yoga into the work that she does. So we very much work like that as well.
And of course the difference is you're bringing the body into the, I guess, the healing process, which
is the total integration therapy. It's the mind, body, spirit, healing on all levels.
That's right. You can't not sort of talk about the body. And I guess the difference between even, like, if you do deep relaxation and hypnosis, that's still keeping still, whereas yoga is actually moving and dynamic. And I have heard of another therapist who will actually heal through movement.
Yeah, I think I've heard that too. And plus you're bringing in self-affirmations and creative visualization. And it's very powerful for reprogramming those negative thoughts and feelings.
And certainly for women, I guess something I feel very passionate about is the awful statistics that I think it's somewhere, you know, almost a quarter to a third of women in some places have actually experienced sexual abuse.
And for sure,
in our culture, and I know in India, they talk about an epidemic of rape. And So when we're talking about empowering women, I guess their ability to be proud of their sexuality and their feminine is going to be terribly important in righting that damage and that imbalance, don't you think, Trina?
I think so too, and I think it, you know, it seems that it's the time of the divine feminine now, and even from the Chinese astrological year of the sheep or goat, it's a more yin year, a lot more calmness, peace between families on the international level, all that kind of thing. So it'll be interesting to see
A lot of it has to do with, you know, when you've had trauma, a lot of it has to do with being empowered by finding your inner power. And I heard you talk about self-love quite a bit. And when I worked as a, I mean, America has an epidemic of molestation and sexual abuse and rape. I worked in the court system as a criminal defense investigator for 20 years, and I saw so much of it, and even working with children, that, you know, I got to really know that aspect of criminal justice quite a bit, and victimization, which happens quite a bit to men as well. And I heard you mention self-love quite a few times, and I think that's really important, and that has a lot to do with finding your inner power. So I thought maybe you could talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, I think so too. I think that's, you know, it's one of the keys really of what we're trying to achieve with Divine Feminine. And it comes back to, when I was talking to David before, I was talking about my history in social justice activism, and I found that as a yoga teacher, I was actually impacting people's lives a lot more through the yoga that they were doing. They were empowering themselves because they had to come to class and they had to do the practices. It was not, you know, me doing anything to them. Yes. And by making that decision, that was very empowering for them. And it also impacted and rippled out into their families in ways that, you know, that nobody really sort of, you know, talked
really?
About until, yeah. So, for example, they would do their yoga class. That would be their one time for themselves in that week, perhaps, or sort of their time out from, you know, all the busyness and everything else and their responsibilities. And then they'd go home, and then their families would say, geez, you should go to yoga more often because, geez, you're so much nicer, calmer, you know, blah, 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 whatever, after your class. And so those, the impact that was generated just from them making the decision to do some yoga or meditation or whatever the case may have been, and then having that ripple out into the world was, you know, was fantastic. And it's an act of self-love to take time out for yourself, to do something for yourself that's good for your health, for your mental health, for your physical health.
It's very confidence building.
Say that again, David.
I said it's very confidence building, and it's almost like when you see these people coming out of that, they're almost glowing and radiating out that positive light and that ripple effect that you just mentioned.
It's actually, it's interesting that you're saying that it's an act of self-love. Because when we think about self-love, I guess we almost think about an emotion, you know, and we think about someone trying to generate as much loving feelings in their heart as possible. But love is very much a dynamic thing as well, and it also involves actually going, putting the time into going somewhere, putting the effort into yourself.
It's an active energy dynamic for sure.
And
it's a vibration that radiates very strongly and
that's
very powerfully.
That's right. Mm. So, wow. Look, what we might do is we might take a break now just for 5 minutes, and then perhaps when we return, we could talk a little bit more about the conference, and then we'd love to hear a little bit more about what
your experience with social activism.
That's
and maybe
right.
and following that, maybe we have a friend named Susan Glenn, who we've had quite a few times on our show, and she talks about being the beacon of light as a very active way of making positive change in the world.
So we might talk about, you know, how to make change in the world. So we'll just take a quick break, and we'll be back soon.
Thank you. Welcome back, everybody.
Hello, this is Lana Love.
And David Love.
And today we're talking to Trina Borden-Smith, who is an expert in the area of spiritual and personal development and yoga, and who is organizing the Divine Feminine Conference this weekend.
We're having an excellent show, and love that song, by the way, Dancing in the Moonlight.
Yes,
very uplifting.
Absolutely.
Great for this show.
Hi, Trina, could you tell us a little bit more about what sort of topics, what sort of people, and what sort of happens at the Divine Feminine Conference? Are there any men at all?
There's actually a sacred women's space. So I would love to see something similar started by a man who wanted to run a Divine Masculine event, because there's obviously a lot of healing that needs to happen around the masculine as well. But we've decided that with the Divine Feminine, the work that we're doing is for women, and to have men in that space would change the energy and the dynamics of what we're trying to do. So it's really a pioneering event. This is the second one we're running. The first one we ran was in 2011. So it's been 3.5 years since I've been able to come back and bring Divine Feminine back. And I think it's the right time, as we were saying before. So for me, it's really an opportunity to offer women through the speakers that come to present, tools and resources to bring greater health, creativity and fulfillment into the women's lives by understanding the deeper mysteries of womanhood. So a lot of ancient knowledge has been lost, and one of the things that women have done for many aeons in tribal societies is gather together as women, whether that was during the menstrual cycle or different ceremonies or whatever. And that, a lot of that's been lost. And a lot of women today are working, we're in the West anyway, in a very male-dominated masculine energy. So there's a lot of achieving and striving and all that, which is, you know, which is great, but it's not balanced for women. So they might find that in their lives. One of my speakers, Marie Lipsitch, was saying, you know, women that come to her in her women's group will often be very highly successful in, as defined by our current, you know, system. So they might have great jobs and they've got their families and they've got this and they've got that and whatever. And yet there's still a level of dissatisfaction. And she puts that down to the fact that the feminine side is not being nurtured. It's not being given the due energy. And so one of the ways to do that would be obviously to, you know, some of the things we were talking about before, self-care and self-love and gathering together as women and understanding, you know, empowering yourself as a woman and bringing your feminine energy and powers, you know, to the fore. So whether that's your intuition, whether that's connection, whether that's working with the unknown, whether that's receptivity, wisdom, you know, connection with nature, all of those aspects, they're not exclusive to the female. Definitely same with the man, but in this case, you know, this is where we're working with women. So we have 9 speakers. I mentioned Dr. Christine Page, who is a fabulous speaker, and we're really looking forward to hearing from her. So she's going to speak on finding well-being and self-love and the embodiment of your feminine powers, as I was mentioning before. So that's going to be fantastic. And it's about reconnecting with your true power and your purpose. And by doing that, you can bring more health and harmony and pleasure into your life.
I just wanted to have you mention the website where our listeners can find information on this event.
And of course, this is Sydney, Australia, so we do have a lot of international listeners as well.
We certainly do, all over the world, which is wonderful. Thank you all for listening.
So what is your website?
So the Divine Feminine website is divinefeminine.com.au, and actually for your international listeners, they might also be interested in downloading the free ebook that's on that page. So it's 10 ways to bring deeper meaning, authenticity and pleasure into your life. And the Divine Feminine speakers from this event and also the previous event, some of them have contributed as well. And they're giving you secrets and tips on health, happiness, creativity, wisdom and fulfillment in your life. So that's something that anyone can access. And there's more details about the event there as well. And while we're speaking about it too, we're also offering a special discount to your listeners. So if they use the code SOUL, and they'll get $100 off the ticket price for this weekend's event. So anyone who's in Sydney or nearby who feels inspired to join us, jump on the website or send us an email, and we'd love to have you along. So a couple of other speakers. Yeah, we've got Sal Flynn, as I mentioned before, and she's a mindfulness expert. So she's done the Jon Kabat-Zinn training and is a you know, able to deliver that training, MBSR training and MBCT training. She's also a yoga therapist and psychotherapist, and she's talking about the realization of the wisdom body. So there is a focus in Divine Feminine about personal development, spiritual development, the gaining of wisdom. So Sal will bring in all of those different aspects, yoga and mindfulness. She'll talk about the breath. She'll talk about movement, all those things that we were talking about before. She's going to employ them into revealing the wisdom body. We've also got Ganga Karen Ashworth, and she's a charismatic singer and songwriter, as well as a transformational voice coach. And again, one of the elements that women particularly need to address, a lot of women have difficulty expressing their authentic self. So that's the work that she does, to express yourself verbally and remove those blockages and speak your truth. It's pretty powerful stuff.
We do a lot of that. We talk about
authenticity, absolutely.
Authenticity and genuine self quite a bit.
Absolutely. So, so important.
We had an excellent show that we're going to be putting out with Intuitive Lauren Weiss soon, I hope. We're just going to get a sound quality technician in. But
about being your authentic self.
She gave us an excellent show, and certainly this is a very important topic that we like to discuss here, so I'm glad you brought that up.
And Trina, can I ask you, do you know whether, is this sort of like something unique? Like, do they have Divine Feminine conferences in America and Europe?
Well, it's interesting, actually. I've noticed, and of course you know how it is, and when you are working in a particular area, then you notice everything else all of a sudden around that. So in the last few weeks, there's been a tele-summit called the Divine Feminine Yoga Summit, which was put on by someone in America who had gathered together a number of yoga teachers, one of whom was Judith Hanson Lassiter that we mentioned before, and a whole range of others. And they had a series of different presentations on the Divine Feminine. And there's some other things now. I've seen another event that's being put on for women in leadership. And, you know, it's still about empowerment of women. It may not be from the sort of spiritual aspect, but there's a lot more stuff happening around this. And we do have, for a number of years, there's been events like the Goddess Conference and things like that. So what I'm doing that's a little bit different to, say, the Goddess Conference is, for example, we're having it in the city, in a hotel. It's a five-star hotel. It's a lovely environment. And it makes it easily accessible for, say, a woman who might be, you know, working in the city in the corporate sphere, and she doesn't necessarily want to go to, you know, to somewhere that's sort of out of town that might be in a field or whatever. And that's, you know, that's great.
Are you saying you've got no trees close to the conference?
Oh, no.
Well, I think just having a space where women can go that's, you know, convenient to get to, that's easy, that they feel, you know, isn't too out of their comfort zone. For example, for some women, this is an easy option. The speakers are, you know, really engaging, and they're ordinary, extraordinary women and easy to relate to in that sort of sense. There's no one who's called the high priestess of whatever, or there's no, you know, it's a different energy, and there's room for everyone. There's also another event in Queensland on the same this weekend for International Women's Day, and they have a gathering called Being Woman, and I'm sure it's a beautiful gathering, but it's very different to the kind of gathering that we're having. So there's an opportunity for women who perhaps are interested in having a bit of a look. Oh, the Divine Feminine sort of, you know, of interest to me is an attractive sort of something I want to explore, but they don't necessarily want to kind of, you know, maybe go and do a weekend, a tantric weekend with Martina, who I know that you've interviewed recently, because that might be too much out of their comfort zone. So it's something that they can come out, explore around the edges a little bit, but yet within, you know, within the powerful presentations of the women, there's still amazing stuff happens, the transformation. I mean, we had such amazing feedback from the first Divine Feminine, and, you know, yeah, it just makes it such a wonderful work to do.
Wow. Something I wanted to ask you about, I'm really interested that both you and Martina, and generally I know that, you know, from my experience with Tantra and Tantric workshops, that there's a big focus on women getting in touch with their feminine side. and all these stories about women, you know, being successful in the corporate field but losing touch with their feminine. And I'm curious about this because, you know, I guess preceding this era, the focus was very much on women becoming more assertive and going into the corporate world, getting jobs and, you know, being on an equal footing with men. And it appears that now the focus is, and one of the problems is women losing touch with their feminine side. Do you find that that's the major issue? Have we moved from, you know, have we been successful in becoming assertive and establishing our, if you like, inner masculine power, although I have problems with that, and has the problem moved on to losing touch with our feminine?
And I think that's one of the things that Christine addresses in some of the presentations that she gives. She's talking about women becoming mini men.
Okay.
And that's what Marie was saying when I said, you know, women maybe achieving a lot in the masculine side of things or in the masculine sphere, in the corporate sphere, but they still are feeling empty. The heart side is what is being lost. The flow, the mystery, the receptivity, there's, you know, for me, I actually went to a workshop with Sally Swain, who's one of our presenters. She's an international the best-selling author and artist as well. And she runs creativity workshops in Sydney, and she calls herself Sydney's original creativity coach. So I thought, you know, as part of the work that, you know, I get to do, lucky me, I went along and did a creativity workshop with Sally, check her out. And, you know, art is definitely not my forte. So one, and of course it's not about, you know, making beautiful art, so to speak. It's about in the creative side, and it doesn't really matter, you know, what it looks like. It's a very powerful workshop for me. And she's trained as an art therapist as well, so she includes a lot of those sort of processes too that you'd be familiar with, Lana, from your work. So one of the things that came up for me, and I actually have it in front of me, is what I drew that day. And it's a large rainbow-coloured heart. And going into it is actually a pathway. And that pathway, for me, the Divine Feminine is a pathway to the unknown. And so therefore it's really challenging, particularly for someone in my line of work where I spend my day planning and organizing and, you know, making stuff happen and the striving and achieving and all that sort of stuff that is more the masculine side, to actually embrace the feminine side. Because even in my own, I'm sort of answering it from a personal point of view, your question, from my own side, to sit in that unknown, to sit in that space where there isn't a goal and allow whatever to happen is really challenging, because I work in a very masculine sort of way, because to run an event, you can't just sit back and wait for it to happen.
Can I just...
Yeah, go on, David.
Oh, sorry, I didn't know you were...
No, you go on.
Go on.
Yeah, so it that's the kind of example I suppose I would use. I mean, you know, there's still the masculine energies around still having to achieve things, but the women have seemed to, a lot of women seem to have lost that focus on being able to be in the unknown. Just, you know, just let it be and see what happens. That's part of the mystery of being a woman.
I love that, Let It Be. I think we may have Dawn play that song at the end, Let It Be by the Beatles. I really like that a lot, and it's perfect.
It's interesting that this is an issue, and, you know, I know in my own work I certainly have come across this very much. But the other thing that I come across, which is a somewhat of a different problem for women, those women that are in touch with their feminine, that are still nurturing, I find a lot of women that that come to me in therapy seem to be, how should I put it, they're still in touch with the feminine side when it comes to nurturing and looking after, very much in touch with that, but also holding down a job. And those women, and I have a lot of women like this, are, I would say, it's not that they're not in touch with their feminine. They are in touch with their feminine, they're in touch with their masculine, but they're overdoing it. They're overwhelmed, and a lot of them are single, or if they're not single, a lot of their partners don't pitch in as much. And we have then basically women that are overwhelmed and doing too much rather than actually being disconnected. I'm wondering whether you might want to comment on that.
I think that's the nature of this, you know, city living, and perhaps like that in the country too, but it's also just kind of a comment on the modern world, isn't it? And it doesn't allow for the feminine to be at the fore, because you have all these things to do. There's no time to sit and connect with the tree outside my, you know, my office here that I can and see. And the tree here is actually my inspiration for the work that I do. And I'm getting all choked up as I'm talking about it. Because, you know, before I came on to talk to you, I just went out there and I stood and gazed at the tree. And, you know, it's not that I expected anything to happen. It was just a moment to connect with nature, to connect with myself, to calm my mind, to be in the right frame to speak to you. And those are the things that get lost in the busyness.
I think that's true for everyone, almost everyone. Can I just add that as far as my spiritual awakening had a lot to do with meeting the divine feminine essence on the spirit plane and on the inner plane. And I think I experienced that very strongly, and I really experienced every aspect of feminine energy and that feminine consciousness, that Aphrodite, Sophia, Venus, whatever name you want to give to that collective entity or energy. And it was really amazing. And one thing I know about true self, which is true for everyone and particularly true for women, is that when we talk about finding your authentic self or genuine self or true self, that means really experiencing and finding every part of yourself. And it doesn't mean becoming the goddess of love. And I know you know this, Trina and Lana, but it means really not being competitive with men in the physical world, but really reconnecting with your femininity, but with all aspects, because this divine feminine essence embodies all aspects of all women, all personality types. And I felt this very strongly, and I'm probably one of the few men in history, I think, that's really connected so well to this source. That I actually get synchronicities from the spirit plane from this source quite a bit. And it's a strong presence in my life. And it's really wonderful. And she really is the goddess of love in such a deep way, but also a very strong spirit, a strong entity.
I must say, having David as a partner who is inspired and loves the divine feminine is beautiful and quite healing to me, and you know, and healing not just on a personal level, but on a, should I say, almost feminine historical level, because for so long the masculine seems to have not acknowledged and respected the sacred feminine. And I think that if we could inspire more men to be really honoring of the feminine, I think we could really redress the imbalance and the tension between the sexes.
Indeed. And I think going back to what David said, it's very true. I mean, there is the aspect of the divine feminine, which is the love and the inspiration and the joy and the transformation and all that. But there's also the destruction. And through our monthly cycles, it's the opportunity to release and let go collectively for the family, for, you know, the village back in those days. And that is the time to release all the old energies of that previous cycle and bring in the new. So, you know, and you've got representatives of the divine feminine, Kali in the Hindu tradition, for example, and she's a pretty evil, scary-looking woman.
Oh, yes. We know someone who embodies that, and she's okay with that. And we need to, and men need to respect that, and women need to respect that about other women. That's an aspect of humanity.
Oh, that's an interesting way of looking at it, that menstrual cycle, that it's a release of almost toxins.
Yeah. I know we could talk to someone about Kali, who embodies that, and who's okay with that, and I'm okay with that too. Men certainly have that, and women have that too. And there's a way of, you know, handling that in an appropriate way, and you know, that's okay.
Well, that's why the women would gather and have their red tents and have that time alone. And often, you know, as women cycle together, if they're in the same group or family or village or whatever, and coming together to release collectively for that tribe or that group.
And as a matter of fact, we have a a connection to an author in one of the Aboriginal tribes in Darwin, who we should probably have on our show sometime if she's interested, who told us a lot about that and how it's a sort of a, she's an elder grandmother of this Aboriginal tribe. And
I was actually quite surprised because she said that, you know, I had thought that in Aboriginal culture the masculine is dominant, but apparently there's quite a few tribes, including hers, that are very matriarchal.
But the men are still the protective hunter-gatherer defenders, and yet but the women make the decisions, and they do exactly what Trina's saying. They separate and they make their decisions, and they cooperate with men, and they respect the men and love the men.
But the women actually make the decisions. That's interesting, and I like that.
Yeah. And one of the reasons for that, Lana, is because the women are perceived to be able to make decisions to look to the next seven generations. And so they allow them the power because the women have got such long sight that they're caring for the next seven generations, and no decision will be made without taking into account the seventh generation, which is a pretty amazing way when you think about the fact that our politicians are only looking towards the next election as a general rule, and to think if the perhaps some of the power and decision-making was in the hands of the feminine, that we would be looking much, much longer term when we make these decisions.
Well, yes, and look, I think sometimes it, unfortunately, some men do get carried away with aggression and anger, and because women have traditionally been nurturers, I think that it is time for women to be, you know, take part more in decision-making, and we might find that there'd be sort of less, you know, more healing for the planet.
Right.
Something I also wanted to address just in the last few minutes of our show is that, so we have this wonderful Divine Feminine Conference, and certainly it sounds like there would be possibly equally a need for a Divine Masculine Conference. Mm. And I wonder, David and I have actually been wanting to establish a love conference, which actually brings the sexes together. And that's very much what we're about in our Universal Soul Love. Our soul, the S in soul, stands for the sacred union of the feminine and the masculine. The O stands for oneness of everyone. U stands for unveiling of the self. And L stands for life after life. But the first aspect, the union of the divine feminine masculine, it sounds like we could really do a conference on that because once the feminine has healed and finds its power, once the masculine, of course, men are somewhat confused about their role.
And that's part of the problem is men are confused, I think, because we're in the post-feminist era now. But that can certainly change. There's no reason
why
not to. And we have a popular happiness conference here. Why can't we have a love conference, right?
Well, absolutely. A love conference where we could actually look at the two sexes coming together in a divine harmony. So, look, we're about to finish. So, look, we wanted to really thank you, Trina, for coming on the show. You know, you've bringing a wealth of experience and sensitivity and passion, inspiration to the area.
Yes.
All the best with your conference.
Yes, absolutely.
And we'd love to have you on the show again sometime. And it's goodbye from me and David, Universal Soul Love.
Thank you.
Have a great week.
Thank
Bye
you
now.
So much. Bye.